Didn't record this time, I will. Okay. So usually when we start talking about time, we talk about past, present, and future. This discussion does not start there. It gets there after a couple of pages, but it doesn't start there. And that's pretty interesting, I think. And what it does do is, let's see, I'm trying to make one more small adjustment, excuse me, but I can't quite do it. What it does do is talk about the moment of time. At least that's my understanding of what the real focus is here. So if we look, take a look at page 124, which was the first page of the reading, down at the in the second paragraph, Rinpoche talks about lower time, and I remember. I think in the guidance I pointed out that lower time is not just our ordinary time. It's something we discover, as he says here, and we discover it by starting to think about time. You know, when we investigate time, we really have an opportunity to understand something, to discover something, and that discovery is lower time. That discovery is our ordinary time, but with the recognition that we're actually ready to ask questions about time. We're ready to look at it in a new way. So that's our starting point, really. You know, a readiness to ask questions about lower time. So Rinpoche is talking here about the nature of lower time. And as I said, he doesn't start by saying, well, it comes in three flavors, past, present, and future. What he says is, in this second paragraph on page 124, he says this lower time is, that's in italics, the appearing and transforming of the subjective, objective, and peripheral components that constitute a situation. And I think we should take some time to investigate the significance of that. What he's emphasizing here is, to borrow a term that comes up a couple of pages later, he's saying that in time there's a given together quality. So if you're talking about time, in our ordinary way of talking, at least, we talk about moments of time, or maybe we say at this point in time, or if we say right now, that comes to the same thing. We're talking about a moment, a situation. And Rinpoche makes a really interesting point, actually, I think it's in Love of Knowledge. He says that if you want to talk about reality, which is not exactly what we're doing now, but if you want to talk about reality, what's necessary for reality is that it has to exist right now. If something doesn't exist, I mean, normally we just say it has to exist. We're talking loosely here. But normally we just say it has to exist. But what we really mean is that it has to exist right now. Because let's say we're talking about New Year's Eve 2012. It's not real because it doesn't exist, right? And let's say we're talking about the Revolutionary War. It was real. I guess this gets us into the three times, but it's not real right now. And so if you ask, what is it that make something real, what is it that gives it that special flavor? It's that it exists right now. But then, if you ask, and this is the point that Rinpoche makes, he says, if you ask, well, what makes right now, the only thing that makes it right now is that I'm here. So, in that way, in other words, you know, 100 years ago, I wasn't here, and nothing that was real at that point is real now. Nothing There's a special flavor to the reality now. But it seems very strange that reality depends on just me, And of course, for you, it depends on you, right? It doesn't depend on me, it depends on you. I happen to occupy the same reality you do because in this moment, I'm with you, we're together. So that's the characteristic that Rinpoche really points out as the fundamental quality of lower time, of our ordinary time, once we begin to look at other possibilities. It's that a moment in time is a coming together of what he calls here the subjective and objective and peripheral components. They come together and there's a transformation, the appearing and transforming. So they appear and then they do this dance, this transforming dance. And that is lower time. It's well, I think it's a good question. We think in terms of subjective and objective. So there's my, loosely speaking, there's my inner experience, and then there's the outer world that I engage in. But there are peripherals, and when I read that, I thought about something that's discussed in Buddhist texts, and so maybe it's not quite fair to use that, but I'll try anyway. When I read that, I thought about things like language, that it's not mine, but it's not objective. You could talk about other kinds of abstraction, for example. Culture, right. I'm not sure that's exactly what he means. He never says anything more about it, but I think let's put it this way. You can say subjective and objective, and then that doesn't seem like maybe you've covered everything. And just in case you haven't, peripherals is kind of a catch-all, let's say. So that is the central focus that Rinpoche starts with. All these different things have to come together. Now, here we are. At this moment in time, we're having this conversation. Everybody's at their computer or telephone. And of course, as you know very well, for computers to work, there has to be this incredibly complicated network of things in operation. So all of that being given together, that's what constitutes a moment of time. So let's clarify that a little bit more. One thing that seems to me important to notice, or at least to discuss, because I'm not saying that I have the right take on this necessarily, is that it seems to me that when we talk about everything being given together in this moment in time, we have this kind of theoretical sense that what's given together, what's happening in this moment of time, includes everything. And by that I mean, to jump right out to a big level, the Earth, the solar system, the galaxy, the people who are living in Africa that I've never met, the whole complex of everything that I understand to be existing right now. I don't think that that's the right way to think about this. And it's because we really do start off with this fundamental distinction in terms of subjective and objective. And a moment in time really constitutes what matters to me. You could say it's not just matter in the sense of the galaxy, it's what matters to me. So everything and I don't mean like if I understand about the computer, but I don't know the first thing about the machinery that my network, my service provider is running. Is that given as part of the moment of time? Well, it depends on how you want to look at it. If you're interested in the causal structures, fine. But if you're not, if what matters to you is, here's my computer and it's not working right or whatever, although it seems to be fine, nice computer. then that's what constitutes what's given together. That's what constitutes a moment in time. So, in that sense, a moment in time and our understanding of time, I mean, the way that we make sense out of time is very much centered on the self, which of course is what Rinpoche says. But I thought it would be a good idea to maybe explore that for a moment experientially. So just take a moment now, let's all take a moment, to ask yourself, what's given in this moment of time? That is, what is a, you might say, what is the world, the reality, that is constituted in this moment in time? Let's take a moment and just look at that. Ask yourself. Okay, so did anybody notice anything interesting worth sharing that you'd like to mention? Anything that surprised you a little?
What seems to be happening is how far out my senses reach. So it's whatever I can see, whatever I can hear, and any thoughts that I can observe, so that there's a me right in the middle of this moment.
Okay, so the senses definitely have play a very important role. Now you said any thoughts that you can observe, but it does also seem to me that what's happening, and this is in the subjective domain, I guess, is you hear a sound and you react to it, right? So there's a subjective reaction. So something that struck me in doing the exercise was part of what's going on here is, let's call it a subjective future. I didn't notice the past so much, but there was a subjective future. I noticed certain thoughts, you could say, kind of crowding in about what was going to happen after this phone conversation. So that goes against the grain a little, because if you say, well, what's given together right now? And I'm saying, well, the future is given right now. But you could say, well, it's only my thoughts about the future, no big deal. But it does seem as though past and present and future in that sense are given together right now, and that that's what constitutes a moment in time. Anybody else want to say something?
Could we call that the anticipated future and the remembered past rather than the future and the past?
Yeah. Sure, I think those are good terms. If we thought about it, it could get a little bit. I mean, people have thought about this and come up with various terms, but yes, we anticipate the future, and that's not the real future in the sense that it's not going to turn out exactly the way we imagine, and we remember the past, and that's presumably not. That's a little bit more complicated, but to say, is that the real past? In some sense, I mean, certainly sometimes the two won't match. You might remember something having happened a certain way, and it's possible to go back and establish that it didn't happen that way at all. So yes, the anticipated future and remembered past, or just the subjective past and future. But one way or another, our sense of given together is something that is broader than, or maybe you could just say it operates in a different dimension than, our usual understanding of past, present, future, which we tend to think of either as objective, right? So there's 1 second, 1 second, 1 second, and we're all, if we were all looking at watches with that marked the seconds, we could all pretty much agree that 1 second, 1 second, 1 second. Or maybe you could say the beating of the heart, is objective. So there's that, and there's the subjective past and future, which we just talked about a little bit. But both of them are included, subsumed in this moment of time. And that's the fundamental underlying structure, the moment of time. So, of course, moments change. And again, if we looked at it objectively, we'd say, well, there's this moment, and now there's this moment, and now there's this moment. If we look at it in terms of moments the way we've just been talking about it, it's a little different, it seems to me, because a moment of time, and this is hard to talk about, this would really be something that we would need to explore and that you might want to try to explore. How long does a moment of time last? If we're looking in this way, which is not exactly subjective, not exactly objective, it's something that's shaped more by our interests and, as Hayward said, by our senses, and experiences, memories, and so on that come in. A lot of different, all these different things that Rinpoche mentioned, the subjective, the objective, and peripheral, whatever that means, they all come together and they create a moment. But how does that moment last? That's the question. And it seems to be, this is at least a preliminary take, and Rinpoche doesn't really talk about this here in this chapter, but it seems to be that a moment lasts as long as our interest lasts. In other words, let's say that right now you got a phone call and you went off to, you left this session and you went off to answer the phone call. That would be a different moment. But if you ask yourself, what about now? What about this conversation we're having? Isn't that a sequence of moments? Yes, it is. But it's not so obvious that that sequence is defined by, a second or a minute or some objective standard of time. It's much closer to a subjective understanding of time, but even that doesn't seem exactly right. It's defined by our interest. So if you're listening to me and you're waiting for me to end my sentence, I mean, maybe that's not exactly what you're thinking, but you're waiting for me to arrive at the end of a thought, and you can really say, oh, I understand, or I don't understand, or that's right, or that's wrong, or you can react however you want to, then you could say that thought is what's structuring the moment. If you have a somewhat different set of concerns, then it might be that the moment is longer than that, that the moment is, since we started talking. It's a fluid kind of a thing, this notion of lower time, lower level time. It's not just subjective time, because it's involving the whole realm of what's happening, the subjective, the objective, and everything else. But it does seem to be very much shaped by my concern. So it's kind of close to the subjective, I guess you could say. I mean, the more I talk about it, the more it seems like it's close to the subjective, but I'm really hesitant to call it the subjective. It seems to me more than that. Anybody want to say anything about that?
What's your hesitancy to call it subjective? If it's about interest.
Right. Well, I'm not sure. That's a good pointer. I wouldn't exactly say it's about interest. I'd say it's shaped by our interest. And that's a part of what defines the moment. So that subjective element of interest, is playing a very important role. But the fact that we're interested in something doesn't mean that the rest of the world may not intrude. Again, to use the example I was using, if while this phone call is going on, you suddenly get a phone call, sorry, while this phone call is going on, your cell phone rings, let's say, then, the moment is going to shift for you as soon as that happens. And immediately your subjective interest is going to be what's shaping that. So I don't, you know, maybe I should just be calling it subjective. I just have this feeling that that's not quite enough.
Sounds like it's too exclusive.
Yeah, it's too exclusive. That's right. That's my sense. And part of it, I suppose, is that, you know, Rinpoche is going to go on and point out what the relationship is between time and the self, between this lower level time and the self. Maybe we should keep the question open a little until we get to that. There is something that Rinpoche says that I think is worth pointing out about this idea that the defining structure of lower level time is not past, present, future, but moments of time, which are these not objectively measured, but these complexes, these things that are given together, and that a moment is what's given together. I guess again, that's why I'm not so comfortable saying it's just subjective. But anyway, we'll leave that. He does say something on page 124 that I think helps clarify this at the bottom of the page, right after the sentence we've been talking about, which is this lower level time. And he says that we can't abstract out any of the things that show up in a moment of time. And the reason he says that, and so you might say, well, for instance, the subjective, we can't abstract that out and say that's what a moment is. The reason you can't do that is because the abstracting is also part of what time presents, right, or what time bears. So if you say, if you make a distinction, then that distinction is also a part of what is given together in a moment of time. Right? So it's a very fluid notion, this idea of a moment in time. But it, you know, it's even more fluid, and this is part of what I'm wanting to emphasize, it's more fluid than saying it's this very, very tiny instant. It might be tiny, but it might be bigger because there's other elements coming into play. How you interpret it, how you understand it, how you experience it, what your perceptions are, what your reactions are, what your judgments are, what the senses are feeding to you, all of that comes together to give moments of time, and that, he's saying, is the fundamental unit, you could say, of time. Now, on the next page, and we're really just at the beginning of the reading, you know, but these readings are always very rich. So on the next page, when he at the top of the page, he starts to talk about the time that operates in our realm. And there's two things that seem really important to point out here. One is he says that what we're talking about is a particular focal setting on great space. Okay? First, I mean, he introduces great time, and of course, we're jumping into the middle of a discussion, so it's a little bit, you know, it would be nice to go back and look at what he says about great time and great space, but I think for our purposes, we don't have to get too specific about that. What he's saying is that, first of all, time is more than just this lower level notion of a moment of time, which is all the things that are given together, a given together complex. Time is more than that. What happens is that we find ourselves in this situation and with all the elements that arise together, because we have taken a particular position or focal setting. In the later books of the TSK series, Rinpoche talks a lot about positions and positioning. He doesn't talk as much about focal setting. I don't want to say that the two things are exactly the same, but some of you may not be familiar with the idea of focal setting. He's using the analogy of focusing a camera. And of course, you know, camera technology has changed, so we don't do that in quite the same way anymore. But the basic idea is that, you turn a, you change the opening of the lens on a camera, and as you do, some things come into focus and other things go out of focus. And actually, I think the more interesting analogy there is with a microscope. If you're looking at a slide under a microscope and you change the focus, it's as though a whole new layer of existence comes into being. At one level of magnification, you see certain things, and then if you change the focus and the magnification, it's more the magnification really, those things stop existing. They become just blurs, and a whole new level of things shows up. And that's kind of what he's saying. It's the focal setting that you take determines, creates a kind of a local reality. And so if you bring that back to the what we were saying about time, it creates a lower level time, right? And he also talks about that here in terms of the local capacity for opening to reality. So it's limited because it is just this one take. And he talks about local partitioning. And it's at that point when he talks about how we have this focal setting, we have a limited version. That limited version gets put together in our ordinary time in terms of a past, present, future scheme. That's at the end of the very first paragraph on page 125. And what he says is that once we have this kind of local focal setting or this local situation, and in that situation, everything is given together, right? And that's what makes the moment of time. But part of what structures that situation is the organization, the division into past, present, and future. And that's where it arises, right? Once we've taken this kind of limited focal setting on great space, then time is going to show up in a particular way, a local way. And that local way is linear time. So one way to think about that, something we talk about when we talk about time and time-space knowledge, and people in general talk about this question, is in what sense is time like space? In space, we can say space has three dimensions, basically, right? And then people say, and time is the fourth dimension. And there's a very real question whether that's a valid way to talk, because it's saying you can treat time as though it were like space. And that may be true, but it may not, because time is really very different from space. But in this context, that actually does seem like exactly the right way to think about it. You've got this local setting, this local partitioned off reality. What's the other word he uses here? A local capacity for being open to reality. And what fits into that local capacity is something we can experience and understand and be familiar with. What does not fit, we can't. It's just not available to us. And the past, present, and future are like, if you imagine that local setting is like a house that we live in, past, present, and future are like three rooms in that house. Right? So they really are dimensions of the local reality. And I guess you have to say that past, present, and future are the only three rooms in that house. So everything is going to fit in one or the other of those rooms. And so in that perspective, in that understanding, it really does make sense to say that time is a dimension in the way that space is a dimension. And then within those three rooms, you could say, well, our lower space shows up too, the depth and width and height are also available, and the things that can show up in the space that's dimensioned out in that way. But at this point, what we're focusing on is time. So past, present, and future are part of our temporal situation. They're part of what time gives us. But they're not the fundamental dimension of time. They're I don't know, I think maybe I've said it as well as I can at that point. Let me just say a couple more things, and then we'll stop. So one is, you might say, well, why do we have to have these three dimensions? Why don't we just have one time, I guess? And the answer is, it has to do with that particular focal setting. So you have great time, and great time for our purposes, we talked. I said a little about this in the guidance paper. Great time is just this wider possibility for temporality. We don't have to get too focused on it, but it's unitary, and somehow we turn it into three. Why do we turn it into three? Well, because we have a local setting, right? A focal setting, we've created this world or temporal structure in which a certain limited set of possibilities is given together. That's what it means to have a moment of time. And because it's limited, great time can't fit. So we toss out certain aspects of great time, and in terms of our immediate local setting, the way we toss them out is we deposit them in the past or the future. The wholeness of time is going to get split up into these different realms. And past and future are like the elsewhere that time does not, that our local time does not allow. So you might say, but wait, past and future are part of our local time. And they are. But they're these incredibly reduced versions. There's a certain kind of aliveness that we find in the present. And that's our best connection, you could say, to great time. And then there's these incredibly ghostly things, each in their own way, that we call the past and the future. And those are very, very tenuously connected to the dynamic and energy of time. And so if you feed that model back in, you say, well, and then our local time, our local present time does also not participate in the wholeness of great time, because a lot of it has already been, we've had to bleed it away into the past and the future. And that present experience of time, that's all we have. And that's why, and Rinpoche talks about this more in the later part of the chapter, that's why we always have this sense of something is missing, something is lacking. We are subject to time. We're not in control of time. We're death, as he says, is the great example of that. It all comes from the fact that we have this particular take on great time, on the potential, the whole potential of time. We turn it into something that is structured in this local past, present, future way. And the other point to make about that, just very briefly, is that the ego, the self, is an expression of that. When you've structured time, when you've taken a local, a limited setting, you have a limited understanding of what's possible, and you structure it in the way that we structure it, then the ego also gets set up. The self also gets set up. So the self and lower level time are, they're given together. But That's actually enough to say, but I want to make the point a little more strongly. They're absolutely inseparable from each other. You know, the fact that we experience in terms of a self that has experiences in the present is inseparable from the way that we structure time. But it is a structuring of time. It is a limiting, a reducing of what time makes available. And on page 129, Rinpoche says, it's all due to an arbitrary focus on reality. Right? I can't see that right now. Let's see. But, you know, I think the thing to understand there that's important is the arbitrary focus. You know, it's not that it's arbitrary. I mean, that's not the problem. What's arbitrary is that we limit what time presents. You know, so it's not that we've made the wrong choice. You could make another choice, and it might be more open, or it might be more closed, and it might have a different sense of self, or, you know, a very attenuated self sense of self. But it's going to be limited, and it's the fact of limitation. It's the fact that we set things up in this kind of local way. Now, as Rinpoche writes in this chapter, that whole way of talking about it is kind of limited at the bottom of page 126, actually. He says, time's flow is arranged in an orderly way, corresponding to what has been experienced or presupposed, and what has been repressed or avoided. And then he makes the point, and if you look at that language, it's evident in the language, but he makes the point. He says, this way of describing the situation makes considerable concession to the view of the ego as an active, independent item in time. So he said it's only a first approximation. The point is that the ego, the self, is given together with everything else. And when you start to say, well, we've set things up in this way, you're already buying into that model. A more accurate thing to say would be something like, you know, time in this particular local manifestation, in this momentary way of understanding time, gives the ego, gives the past, the present, and the future, gives things, in fact, gives everything that we can identify and put a label on. That all comes out of this commitment to a lower level understanding of time. And that's why Rinpoche can say, and he talks about this on page 127, that everything that exists depends on time. And then he says, you know, not the way we usually think about time, but it's because time has this structuring power. It structures a lower level of time, and that's what matters. That's what gives us our situation. So where we're headed with this is that if we can really connect to time in a deeper, less limited way, then all of that is up for grabs. The possibility is there that it could all be completely different. So that's it. That's what there's time to talk about today. I hope that you're finding that that you're finding this a fruitful approach. You know, in one way, I think the points are pretty straightforward. Well, that probably doesn't sound right. There are a few key points we need to tune into. When we do, then there's really the possibility for tremendous change. And so the exercise, and I'm sorry, I'd actually meant to leave some time to talk about the exercise. Exercise 16, space-time knowledge on the ordinary level, is a way of really investigating that in effect says, you know, let's try to set aside this particular structure, this lower level time that has been set in place. Let's just see what happens. Let's just see. So, we continue reading. I don't actually have the reading list in front of me. I'm assuming we go on with the next chapter, but please check back to make sure. There are a few pages, I think, in this whole section on time that are not assigned, for reasons that made sense to me when I set it up. So check back, and we will meet again next Sunday. And please be sure to take advantage of the online discussions that we have. We'll talk to you soon.